Hello and welcome to another episode of Hanks a Lot, the comprehensive and encyclopedic podcast where we examine chronologically the films of Tom Hanks. I am your beloved host, Kent Shelton, and joining me this week from Hollywood, California, our film critic at large, Mr. Trace Oakley. And from Seattle, Washington, the town best known for being the backdrop of the Elvis Presley movie, It Happened at the World's Fair, our musical director, the supersonic Mr. Kevin Dennis. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to the big show.
That was a movie that starred a little pint-sized Kurt Russell, who went on to play Elvis.
Oh, is that, there you go. Yeah, It Happened at the World's Fair. Has the Space Needle on the poster, I think.
It does, yes.
Elvis kind of dancing next to it. So, yeah.
Yep. until he graduated to smaller needles.
Yes, indeed. Well, now we've gotten off on the wrong foot again.
It's what we do.
Yeah. This week, my friend, we're talking about a movie called A Man Called Otto, O-T-T-O. It's a film starring Tom Hanks where he plays a grumpy old son of a gun. And I think we're going to kick off with a review right away. Cue that jingle.
Well, now it's time for the review. Trace, please tell us, what is your view?
The oddly titled 2022 film A Man Called Otto is a remake of a Swedish film called A Man Called Ove, but both films seem to be of the same oeuvre. The American incarnation tells the story of a young woman with two small kids and another on the way. She's married to a nice guy who isn't the brightest tool in the shed, evidenced by the fact that when it comes to borrowing tools from the shed, he gets their names wrong, doesn't know how to use them, and gets severely injured when he tries. The couple have just moved to a townhouse complex with a motley bunch of neighbors. There's an elderly couple, both battling debilitating illnesses of varying degrees, and are being forced out of their home due to a supposed claim by their absentee son that they are unable to care for themselves and must be annexed to a nursing home. There's also a fitness-obsessed fellow who has never exercised his sense of boundaries. Rounding out the hood is a transgender paper boy, paper them, and a stray cat. The plot, such as it is, revolves around various occurrences and dilemmas that arise amidst the residents. Reuben, the victim of a severe stroke, can no longer fix the radiator as he had for years. Tony, the aforementioned dimbulb, falls off a ladder and breaks his leg. He heads to the hospital, family in tow, where a clown entertains the children and steals money from waiting loved ones. A man waiting for a train has a sudden heart attack, and a nearby social media reporter who covers the story later learns of the plight of Reuben and Anita and the nefarious plot by their son and the real estate developers. She reveals the dark and illegal truth live on air, and the elder couple remain in their home. Malcolm, the trans kid, after a falling out with their father, has nowhere to go but finds a place to stay and inherits a car. The film is a bit like a somber, muted, and non-comedic The Burbs. Like the earlier Misfire, this film is poorly written and directed, but this one boasts more than a few strong performances. There's no shortage of humanity on display, and the small stories being told should not feel as inconsequential as they do, but the film doesn't seem to trust or respect its characters and their plights. Under the direction of Mark Forster, with screenplay by David McGee, this movie unfailingly falls back on soggy and mawkish sentimentality rather than emotional honesty. Even the scene toward the end, where the crooked real estate maven gets his comeuppance, and he is a uniquely scummy scumbag, and his viral exposure would leave even the staunchest corporate apologists cheering, but the scene falls flat, because by then every moment feels calculated, and get that Kleenex ready. The film is frustrating because numerous scenes have great potential for drama, comedy, and even tragedy and a bit of farce, but it instead chooses the road of manipulation, the safe, cheap tugs at the heartstring, all seemingly designed for soft brain viewers with Academy Award screener copies. The performances are generally good. Mariana Trevino as Marisol, the scrappy mom and mom-to-be, carries the film with a unique charm and intelligence. She's not only convincing, she constantly surprises us. Manuel Garcia Rolfo as her husband has less to do, but acquits himself well. Juanita Jennings is wonderful as Anita, a character whose entire world is falling apart, but who must project strength. Mac Beda does nice work as Malcolm, as does Kelly Lamora Wilson as the influencer journalist. Mike Birbiglia is appropriately slimy as the corrupt developer. The cat, who is unnamed and uncredited, is a gorgeous creature who, with his simple expressions, lends a genuine heart to the proceedings, even as the script and direction prioritize imitation humanity and manufactured emotion. The project is further bogged down by some truly awful songs, the sort of emo-ternative whines that play toward the end of every WB drama. These are the sort of songs that add nothing to any plot, and their only recognizable characteristic is sameness. One envisions that these songs emanate not from an artist's mind, heart, or soul, but from a conveyor belt in an office suite at Sony. A Man Called Otto didn't have to be the lost cause that it is, but the atrocious direction and soggy screenplay torpedoes its good cast and potentially interesting storylines. My score, 1 hanky.
Now, I noticed that in your review, you ran through the entire cast and you never mentioned Tom Hanks. He was in the movie.
He did produce the movie. You see the Playtone logo at the beginning there. And he produced it, and I have to say, didn't really do a very good job producing it because it's not very good.
He was the lead actor in the film though too, and kind of the main character. The mean old man who yelled at the UPS drivers and who repeatedly tried to kill himself. That was Tom Hanks.
Oh yeah, I remember the UPS drivers.
All right. I think that this is a little inside knowledge for our listeners. I think Trace's big problem with this movie is that back in 1986, when Trace was in film school, his student film project was about a guy who tried to commit suicide over and over, but was such a loser he couldn't get the job done. And I feel like Trace feels like they ripped off his screenplay.
How do you possibly? I mean, I'm surprised that you remember that. I'm much more surprised that you know what year that was.
Yeah, well, I just think that you put your heart and soul into that thing, and it never got made.
That did not come to mind. To be totally honest, that did not come to mind. Although, I'm very impressed that you dredged that up and that you got so many of the facts correct.
Well, there you go. Yes,
you just had a better review than the movie did, Kent. Well done.
A failure at life. He's also a failure.
Also
at suicide.
A failure at suicide. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. We had a thing where he puts his head in the oven, but he doesn't turn off the gas, so he just bakes his face. And yeah. We bought all this raw chicken that we attached to a guy's face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I think you had it. You had it out for this movie because you're like, wait a
no,
second.
No.
That's my screenplay.
Honestly, haven't thought of that in years since you. You brought it up just now.
Well, I agree with the overall strong performances, overall weak execution. I didn't dislike the movie terribly. I mean, I didn't find it offensively bad. I just found it a little boring, and I felt like that the moments that were there, except for one moment that I thought was genuinely comedically effective, I thought that they missed a lot of opportunities to make it. They missed a lot of chances to really soar as a drama or as a comedy.
Absolutely. What was the comedic moment you liked?
The scene in the hospital where the woman, the nurse tells the character that Tom Hanks's problem is that his heart is too big, and she just can't contain her laughter at that idea. She doesn't even really respond. She just sort of tries not to laugh, and then tries not to laugh so hard that she goes into labor. I thought that was a delightful little moment of comedy with just his problem. His big problem is that his heart's too big. I did occasionally like seeing Tom Hanks as I liked him going off on the people at the hardware store. I liked him just dressing people down and calling them idiots. And every time he was truly a grumpy old man, I thought it was an enjoyable performance, but probably not enough to hang a whole movie on. I will agree wholeheartedly that I thought that those songs that they spent so much time going to, they would every now and then we'd spend a minute or two at the radio hearing some incredibly heartfelt sort of like.
And there was one song that was presented as having been really, really meaningful in the past and inspiring and so forth. So, I mean, it wasn't only that these songs failed to set any kind of tone or enhance what was going on, but this one particular was alluded to as this was the song. This was the life-changing song, and just awful.
I did enjoy some of the flashback sequences with him and his youth and his wife. I thought some of those were appropriately awkward. I thought their interactions were kind of charming. The guy who I believe is a son of Tom Hanks playing young Tom Hanks. I thought, they cast the wrong son because he didn't look a lot like a young Tom Hanks. Whereas his other son, Colin Hanks, looks very much like a young Tom Hanks. I don't know. I would give it, I'd give it more Hankies than you, but probably not a whole lot. Kevin, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm kind of with you on this one. I thought it was fine. I mean, it was fine. I had a problem because I had so much buildup. A lot of my friends and colleagues had told me how great it was and how they thought it was so good. And I was like, okay, well, I'm kind of looking forward to this. And then when I saw it, it was fine, but I didn't think it was a great movie or anything. It was just fine. I thought Tom did a great job with the acting with what he had. And I mean, I thought it was all fine. It was just, it's the F word. It was very fine.
Yeah. You know, it's weird because this movie has a 97% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yet it was not really a particularly successful movie in terms of the box office. But it is, as you said, Kevin, it's a movie that people in general really love, I guess.
I think the reason it was popular was because I have a couple of reasons I think it was popular, at least things that hit with me. I thought the connection of the old couple that was going to have their house taken away and that they were saved by yellow journalism in the Facebook age, that was kind of a nice little revenge of using media for a good thing. Because everybody talks so bad about media all the time, and it is pretty hairy. But just to have it do something good, I think that was what was appealing to a lot of people, that they were saved. And I think that the fact that he turned around, he was the Grinch who turned around, kind of, was a thing that also that I think people felt was appealing. What's sad about that to me is that was so popular with the 97% with so little actual substance to it. I'm just kind of speaks to where people are willing to look at, I think.
Yeah, it really does. It's kind of sad because, how many, really much more superior movies have we talked about just on the show that don't have anywhere near a 97?
Unfortunately, none of our audience would.
Well, now I'll tell you.
Disagree with this.
I'll tell you a way that you could have enjoyed this movie much more. And this was a little viewing tip that I accidentally discovered. I watched half of Pinocchio and couldn't take any more of it, and so then watched this in the middle, and then had to go back and finish Pinocchio afterwards, and. It made this movie so much more enjoyable because it was an escape from Pinocchio for
that I can see. Minutes.
I got to stop watching Pinocchio and watch something else, and it was a relief. So,
Didn't you guys watch this together?
We did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that if you watch this while playing Rush's album 2112, it matches up perfectly, which is really interesting.
I see. So. Yeah.
It's a much different movie.
All right. Well, that's a man called Otto. I was, I did not know that there was a foreign film that this was a remake of.
Yes, it was.
Although it makes sense because it was probably a Scandinavian film of some sort, because it seemed to have that kind of a feel and pacing. And
yeah, I did. I agree.
And I wondered, like, does this take place in Minnesota or something? Because it seemed like every single morning he had to go out and shovel his walk. But then I noticed at some point that all the cars had Pennsylvania license plates. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think this movie's supposed to take place in Oslo or mm-hmm. Finland or something, and has been kind of moved to the States.
Yes. We do learn something from this movie that a clown, regardless of what kind of clown, even a clown entertaining in a hospital, can be something of a what, Kevin?
That would be a money pit.
Yeah.
Although I was about to segue into my own, but that was a lovely setup. Thank you very much. I appreciate the slow pitch. Yeah, interesting how many things that are in Norway and Sweden and over in Europe become popular there, and then America steals that idea and sort of claims it as its own, and Americans don't realize how many movies and TV shows actually were started in Europe, and they have no idea. They have just no idea that it was, that we're catching second to all that. And I didn't realize it until I went over there. First time I realized it was years and years and years ago, way long time ago. And there was a show that was Survivor. It was Survivor, and they did it in Norway and these islands and stuff. And they had to do exactly that show. And then I came over here like a year or two later, and it was this huge new cool thing that Americans had discovered and had generated made. And I was like, no, it was this rinky dink show in Norway for years.
Yeah.
Well, and there's many other examples, but that
and
was
America somehow made Survivor worse.
Yes, indeed. Well, for years, you know, they would come up with a good idea for a TV show in England, and they would do it, and it would run for 10 years in England, which meant they would make 6 episodes. And then in the United States, we'd say, that's a pretty good show, let's spin it off. And in the first season, we'd make 22 episodes, and then it would run for 10 years. And so people forget the British one because, well, they made 6 episodes.
Well, they never saw it.
Yeah, they never saw it. Or even if they did, it played on PBS at 11 o'clock at night, and there's only 6 episodes of it. So, I don't know. I don't know if they've kind of picked that up in recent years. Are they actually making more episodes of things in England, or do they still?
Did you see the original movie of this?
No, I had not heard of it either.
I kind of want to watch the original movie now.
I do too. Yeah, I'd like to seek it out. Yeah, just out of curiosity.
That'd be more interesting. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
I wonder if the title character in the original actually appears, unlike in this one.
Interesting. Oh, boy. Oh, we're going to get sued. It's going to be exciting.
Boy. All right. Well, was there a notable score? Do you have anything?
No.
Trace and I badmouthed the music plenty. What do you have to say?
No, we've covered it. It's the same. Thomas Newman did the score, which we've talked about before. He's done a bunch of stuff, a lot of 007 stuff, 1917. Wally, The Help, Freud. So he's a big shot. Avatar, Jurassic Park, one of them, the 2022 version. Anyway, he's fine, perfectly competent. But
is he related to Randy Newman?
I don't remember. I wasn't interested enough to look it up.
They've got a friend in each other.
They do.
There's too many. I'm gonna let it go. That's good. You know what? You know how many more episodes we have?
Well,
currently,
unless there's a whole bunch of Tom Hanks movies coming out this weekend that I haven't heard about.
One.
Yeah, we might have one singular sensation. I think Wes Anderson's Asteroid City, which is coming up next week. Yep. And that is the most recently released Tom Hanks film. I mean, you know, unless you guys want to.
Unless we don't get around to recording until after one. I think, actually, oddly enough, isn't the next movie is called something like One, or
it's called like Inside, or
I can't remember now.
One word title. Yeah.
Room, or Place.
The, or I think it's called The.
Yeah. And I believe for those of you who keep it, I believe it's directed by Robert Zemeckis.
Oh,
yeah.
So, I'm sure there is a God.
I'm sure there is a God. So yeah, Asteroid City, Wes Anderson's movie is our next one up, and
we're gonna have I think we should have a contest, or maybe a lottery to see what we're gonna do as our next topic for our next show, our next celebrity, and I think we should turn it over to our listeners. And whoever wins will win a grand prize, something like an ice cube in the shape of Kent's glasses. Something really spectacular. Something that's sought after.
A signed DVD, signed by all of us, of season one of Bosom Buddies.
There we go.
Yes.
Or the book of Robert Zemeckis, The Life and Times of a Great Artist, signed by...
I do have a candle that looks just like Jesse Plemons.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Every candle looks just like Jesse
Plemons. That's true. It's really not fair.
That's kind of cheating. All right. Well, we are going to leave you this week, as we often do, with a piece of music. We talked in this movie about how every now and then a song would come on and you'd say, "What is this garbage?" And you're going to get to have that experience one more time.
I'm overqualified for this project. Yeah.
So turn up the bass on your headphones and get ready to be happy as we leave you with this song. And until next week for our final episode for now of Hank's Lot, I'm your host, Kent Shelton, and we'll see you in 7 days. Hank's Lot.
Called Otto, not from Morocco. He functions as a formidable grump. Otto, oh Otto, would you like a taco? Cheer up, be like Forrest Gump. One ladder, one ramp, and a feral cat. Are you gonna let him beat you in social combat? He is the man that is called Otto, well known as the parking lot Gestapo. Otto, oh Otto, every word you say is like a warm color. A dog with one front paw and cataracts could parallel park much better. Heart is too big, and that is what caused Otto to be a miscreant. We have a clown situation. You are not an idiot. A man called Otto, not an avocado. He functions as a formidable grump. Our man Otto, sidewalk desperado. Cheer up, be like Forrest Gump.
Well, you made it through another episode of Hanks a Lot, the Tom Hanks podcast. Our show is recorded and mastered at Cliffside Studios in Spokane, Washington. Your hosts are Trace Oakley, Kevin Dennis, and me, Kent Shelton. Please send corrections, comments, and indecent proposals to hankspodcast@gmail.com. Tom Hanks has not been consulted or compensated and knows nothing about what goes on here. All music used on the show is composed and performed by our own Mr. Kevin Dennis. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Come back next week and bring your sister. And please rate and review us on your favorite podcast catcher. Thanks for the support, and goodbye.